Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photos.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. I'll be here until 10:30 this morning. Julia Reitz is here in the studio for the first hour. Then we'll have about an hour, of open line between 10 and 10:30. Then it'll be a Busey Money Talk. If you have any questions for the Champaign County State's Attorney, the number is 356-9397. The Castle Heating and the Cooling text line is 351-5357. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
You all right?
I'm fine.
You had to rush a little bit to get here.
Hit a lot of red lights, but I wouldn't miss this.
Well, you have the distinction of being my last guest. What do you think of that?
It's a good thing this is radio, because if it was television, people could see that I'm having a little bit of trouble.
Well,
getting a little emotional.
We both might, so we'll do the best we can.
Yes.
So every time Julia is on, I say, "Come on, you got to give me a scoop. You got to tell me something that nobody else knows." And
sometimes I have.
And you have. Well, we've done a few of those over the years. And when we talked a little bit yesterday, you said you had something to tell us and no one knows, and this is good news.
This is great news, and this I wanted to announce on your show because it happened because of your show, really. So as you know, as we've talked about, the Youth Assessment Center is a crown jewel in our criminal justice system, in our services that we are able to provide to young people. It's a program, a place, a space where we can bring young people instead of into the criminal justice system and link them up with services and assistance in our community to try to keep them out of the system and to send them on the right path. And we had recently learned from Unit 4, which has provided for free and very generously the space for this agency, that they are going to need to take that space back.
It was here in downtown.
Right, down in downtown on Randolph Street. It's been for 3 years, and they've been very generous with that. But they need that space now with the construction. And so we've needed to find other space and also money to pay for that space, because they had provided it for free. And so a couple months ago, when I was coming on your show, I was listening on the way, and you were talking to Jimmy Leotode, from Jimmy John's, mm-hmm. about his donation to the rails, to the rail trail bike path. Mm-hmm. And I thought, as I was on my way over here, you know, I'm going to talk to Jimmy, because he was talking about growing up and his youth and things that he had done. And so we met out in the lobby, and that was actually the first time I had met him. And we talked about the Youth Assessment Center.
You were on 1 hour, and then he was on an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we met in the lobby, and you also said, I've talked with you about the Youth Assessment Center, and you've been out there to visit it and mm-hmm. have always been very supportive. And right there, Jimmy thought it was a great idea. And so I'm very happy and grateful and proud to announce that Jimmy and his wife, Leslie, are going to be donating $50,000 to help us pay for a new space for the Youth Assessment Center. And it's a great collaboration between community and local government. And I'm just so grateful and appreciative of his support and of your support over the years for this project.
$50,000. That's, when I heard that, I was overjoyed when you told me about it. And then I started thinking about Jimmy a little bit, and the guy does a lot of stuff, and he all behind the scenes a lot of it that we don't know about. He and his wife have been very generous with their money.
Yes, they've supported, as we talked about, the rail trail. They supported the rebuilding of the clock tower in our historic courthouse. They, and I believe you talked about on your show, I heard also, supported recently a large donation to Crisis Nursery. And so I think this is so consistent with that drive to support this community, and especially young people. I think this is, this is a program that I think is very unique in our state, and I'm so proud of it. Having a separate place where we can bring young people to keep them out of the criminal justice system is a truly unique feature that we have, and so his support is so important and appreciated.
Any idea where you might move? Are people looking for space now?
We have. I believe we've narrowed it down to a space in Champaign over by the driver's license facility off of Round Barn Road. That's going to be a very nice space, and we've been in negotiations with the landlord there. We've had a number of other offers of assistance to get us into that space so that it's ready to go. And I think it's going to be a really, really great project. And I'm looking forward to a ribbon cutting and hoping, of course, that you'll be there.
That would be a great, great day. And again, thanks to Jimmy and his wife for their generous donation. It's $50,000. That's not chump change.
No, that's going to help us pay for rent for at least 3 years, I think. And again, it's going to be a great asset for the community.
All right, we'll take our break here with that good news. Maybe we'll have some better news as we go along this morning. Who knows? We're going to take calls, as always, and this is your chance to talk one-on-one with the state's attorney in Champaign County. We have a lot of calls about various things involving state's attorney and arrests and sentences and all those kinds of things. So here's a chance, if you have any questions, to ask Julia. We'll take our first break here and come right back. On Penny to Your Thoughts, I'm Jim Turpin with Julia Reitz. If you have any questions for Julia, jump right in. I want to talk to you a little bit about the gun problem in our community. I see there is a town hall meeting on January the 17th, the topic among others being the ending of gun violence in our community, or cutting back, doing the best we can. What's this meeting all about? You're involved in that, I think, aren't you?
I was invited, so I don't think we haven't really had a chance to talk about what specifically is going to happen. I believe there's going to be some questions from the organizers first, and then the opportunity for questions from the public. I think it's a good idea to have these conversations. Obviously, people are very concerned, particularly when something happens outside of one of our schools during after a sporting event. I know the Champaign Police Department is very actively investigating that matter, and certainly anyone who has any information should come forward with that, as we always discuss, either directly or through Crime Stoppers, another great local organization that helps us in our efforts. But really, you know, there's absolute reason to be concerned, not just here in Champaign and Urbana, but really across the state and across the country. We're not unique in this issue. And a lot of it has to do with the way that young people solve what they believe are conflicts, the availability of guns, and fear in communities of coming forward and saying things. Social media plays a role, I think, in how young people interact with each other. And there's just so many issues. And I think it's important to have the community involved in this discussion, because really, you know, we, law enforcement, we come in after a situation occurred. We can try, as I said, with our Youth Assessment Center and supporting all kinds of programs and trying to come up with ways to prevent crime and to address those issues. But at the end of the day, at every point in the day, it has to come from those people who are involved on a day-to-day basis. So families, neighbors, teachers,
witnesses,
pastors, local organizations. Everybody really needs to get involved in order to help us address this issue. People say you should just lock them up. You know, that's one way, but I don't think it's the way, because again, we don't come in until afterwards, you know, and when people are in conflict and when they don't know how to resolve issues, I don't think they think that much about the consequences of their behaviors, and we have to stop it before it happens.
You know, all the law enforcement people that I talk to or that call in are always pleading for somebody to come forward. We know there were 20 people that have witnessed this. Please help us if you can. But you mentioned already they may be afraid.
They may be, and that's understandable. Obviously, we're talking about firearms, deadly weapons, dangerous situations. And so we can do what we can to try to support and assist them with that. But at the end of the day, they have to come forward, because we can't put these cases on sometimes without witnesses. And, you know, we can chase people down. We can bring them in handcuffs. We can play their recorded statements when they, what we call, go sideways on us. But we need them at the beginning to, you know, to tell us who did it and what happened.
Are these shootings, this gun violence, in any way related to gangs, or are these all individual conflicts between people?
Right, much more so that. Not really gangs in the classic sense of...
Is that more a metropolitan thing than it is here?
Yeah, but even there, I mean, even in the big cities, the whole gang structure has really dissolved into factions and groups that really change. People go from, you know, one loyalty to another, and a lot of the violence that we see, it's not really violence over turf or drug sales or that sort of thing. It's really much more kind of personal offense
Are most
resolution,
of the,
if you want to call it that.
I don't know if this is a generalization probably, but in these shootings, I read, you know, this was a relative, or this was a friend, or this was a... many of these seem to be happen where somebody that knows somebody else.
Right.
That's not so many like just go shoot some stranger.
That's absolutely true. And unfortunately, sometimes the strangers end up being the innocent victims if they are in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, we saw that on Green Street in the case that is actually going to sentencing today, where a young man and his friends were walking on campus and unfortunately were caught in the direct fire of somebody who was personally upset about his friend having been beaten up by other people. So again, very much this kind of individual offense at a situation, and his, you know, very wrong and tragic reaction with a firearm.
What's the most difficult thing to do when you're trying to figure out how to sentence somebody?
Well, you know, there's never any joy in it.
People get arrested, and then they come in, and then you look at all the evidence and everything, and somebody, you have to say, well, these people are going to be charged with such and such. Is that... It can't be very easy to do.
No, and, you know, I've always said that point is the most important point in the process, where we make a decision to charge someone and what we're going to charge them with, because we are making a statement, bringing someone into the criminal justice system, making a decision on behalf of the victim and the community that is the most, I think, the most important decision. It starts the process on the path. And, you know, and the law sometimes doesn't make sense. I mean, I often see and hear from people about why did this person get this and that person got that. And, you know, sometimes if you really sat down and compared this statute to that statute, your head would spin. It doesn't make any sense at all in some ways. And I think there's a lot, you know, there isn't somebody looking over everything when the legislature makes their decisions sometimes. And sometimes after the fact, we have to say, hey, that didn't make any sense at all. You know, the legislature has increased penalties for gun cases and has made gun offenses mandatory incarceration and added all kinds of provisions into the sentencing process. Yet at the same time, we now have bail reform, where we're trying to make sure that people are not in custody before they've been convicted on what we call lower-level offenses. So they've kind of created a Category A and Category B offenses. And for some reason, a lot of the gun crimes fall under Category B, which are the offenses that are supposed to not be sitting in custody pre-trial. So, you know, those are some issues we need to address with the legislature. When you say mandatory prison but not pretrial, you know, there's some confusion there. And, you know, and a lot of it is based also on someone's prior history. So you'll see sentences where somebody goes to prison for what seems like a lower level offense, but they have a significant prior history, whereas somebody who's never been involved in the criminal justice system before and this is their first time, might end up with a community-based sentence because that's what the law says that we're supposed to start with and try to give people that opportunity.
What if somebody shot someone and they were brought in and you look at their prior history and the guy has four DUIs, something entirely different than than shooting? Is that permissible to talk about that as evidence?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, if you have four prior DUIs, then you're in the felony range already.
Okay.
And so you shouldn't have a gun because you're a convicted felon. And so that elevates the offense also. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be the same type of offense, although certainly if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, that's aggravating in and of itself. So there's all kinds of considerations that we have to put into place that a judge takes into account. And the judge has to outline and follow the law. You know, there's rules. There's factors in aggravation and there's factors in mitigation that have to be considered, because once that judge makes that sentencing decision, then the person has the ability to appeal, and it has to be clear that the judge was following the law. So they take great effort to outline their decision-making process. And so there's all kinds of factors. You know, I when I talk to students, to classes, I always and I talk about how the criminal justice system really favors the accused, protects the accused, because we're the government and we have all this power. We have this awesome power to take away your liberty by incarcerating you, or take away your property by fining you, or your will by making you do things you don't want to do, like counseling or public service work. And with that power comes responsibility. And really the criminal justice system focuses on the rights of the accused to protect the accused against that power of the government. That makes sense, especially when you're the accused, you know. And so
that's the way it's supposed to work, isn't
it? I think
it?
Some people get frustrated when they see that and they say, why, you know, why this result? And it's, you know, it's very complicated. And I understand the frustration sometimes, but that's why I so much appreciate this forum, to be able to come on here and talk about this and answer people's questions as best as I can.
Well, let's see if anybody has any questions. I hope they do too. We're at 356-9397, or you can text us a question or a comment for Julia Reitz. That number is 351-5357. It's 9:27. We'll take a quick break here. News coming up at 9:30. We're back on Penny. I'm Jim Turpin, and Julia Reitz is my guest. She, of course, is the state's attorney in Champaign County. And I figure, Julia, that you must be doing such a good job that nobody has any complaints.
Well, I think everybody just wants to have a positive last week for you here. So, but certainly we'd love to have some calls and answer some questions.
I wanted to talk to you about John Schmidt a little bit, talk to Bob Steigman about this. You knew him, I take it.
Huh? So John Schmidt, who is the appellate court justice who recently passed away on Tuesday of a heart attack very suddenly and tragically, he was the state's attorney in Sangamon County in Springfield when I was first elected. And I remember going to my first state's attorney meeting conference where all the elected state's attorneys get together. And I was very intimidated by it because I was the new one and I had, you know, beat an incumbent who I thought everybody else knew there. And I was a Democrat, which is few, and a woman. Again, at that time, there were only six elected state's attorneys who were women. And so I was a little intimidated by being at this conference, and I remember John Schmidt coming up to me and welcoming me and telling me, and he said this many times over the years, that we were colleagues, and that was really the word he used, that we were colleagues, that it didn't matter what party we were affiliated with, it didn't matter what part of the state we were from. Once we were state's attorneys, and then we were colleagues and friends, and he was a good friend. And a good state's attorney and a good judge. And so I'm stunned, and it's a very tragic loss for us. But again, I really appreciated his focus all the time on the aspect of being colleagues, and the partisanship didn't matter. And we really did and continue to work together as a group on these issues that affect us across the state. I just came back from a conference where we again, met as a group and discussed a lot of the issues that we're all facing and sharing. And, you know, and it's amazing, such a variety, because you've got Cook County with, you know, 900 assistant state's attorneys in that office. And then you've got smaller counties, like I always say, Ford County, north of us, where my friend Andrew Killian is the state's attorney, where it's Andrew and his secretary, you know. So we all come from such different.
He doesn't have one staff person.
No, he doesn't, and he needs one. So I'm there for you, Andrew. I know you could use somebody else, but you know, there's such a wide variety across the state. But we all are, you know, trying to assist each other and deal with some of the same issues that face our communities.
Schmidt,
John was great about that.
The irony of this is that he was appointed a couple of weeks before he died?
Yes, and I think he would have made a great appellate court justice and would have been very fair. He was involved in a number of very high-profile cases while he was a judge in Sangamon County, and so it's a very tragic loss for the judicial system. But on a personal basis, he was a good man and very kind, and so I appreciated his assistance and support and friendship.
What's going on with the Champaign County nursing home funding? I noticed yesterday or the day before, they more financial trouble. They got one of the vendors now that are suing them and suing the nursing home and the county because they owe them bunch of money, $250,000 or something like that, and they're not the only ones. They owe all kinds of money, and we seem to be having these conversations, and it keeps getting they keep getting deeper and deeper in the hole. And I know that every time they talk about it, they say, "Well, we're going to have cuts," and that would mean cuts in all, you know, all the county offices, and including state's attorney.
Well, I think at this point, you know, certainly I can't really address the lawsuit that's just been filed, as I'm the lawyer for the county. But obviously there are concerns about bills and outstanding debts that are owed, and the board passed a budget that provides for funding support for the nursing home for a 6-month period, And I think that that has given us some breathing room to hopefully for the board as a group to make some decisions. And I am hopeful that they're going to come together and be able to come up with some decisions that, of course, we, the elected countywide officials, have said we advocate for the issuance of the RFP so that at least there can be that discussion about sale that was voted on and approved by the voters in the last election. And it's going to have to be the board's decision because you cannot trade, you know, one service for the required statutory obligations that county government has, is required to provide to its citizens. And as much as we would like to be able to do everything for everyone at a certain point, that's the responsibility of government, of the elected officials, to make hard decisions. So it's time.
Yes. And the citizens in the county have said by a large margin we need to sell.
And
you would think that would be one of the overriding guidelines, but it doesn't seem to be.
If there was a way for the nursing home to improve its financial situation, and I believe that the management company is doing their best to try to make that happen, then that would be wonderful. Because again, if we could do everything for everyone, then we should do that. But there are so many other things that we need to do that people are demanding and wanting. Substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment, programming, all kinds of things that we would love to be involved in, not necessarily to directly provide as government, but to be able to support. And so difficult decisions have to be made.
And, of course, we got the jail problem still hanging over our heads and about what to do there.
Well, and I think, you know, I mentioned a little bit before bail reform. There's a new statute that goes into effect, some changes in the Bail Act that go into effect January 1st that are meant to try to address overcrowding in jails or people being held in custody before conviction on lower level offenses. And we've been doing a lot of analysis of our jail population. We always have been, but particularly on this issue. And I can say that, you know, we do a pretty good job of being on top of who is in our custody and making sure that it's the people who are dangerous or flight risks. But yes, those issues are still out there and need to be addressed. But I see the lights flashing.
All three of them,
yes,
are going all at once here.
Let's,
you must have
some
said
calls,
something that somebody would like to talk about. Let's go to Ron. Hello, Ron.
Hey, good morning to you both. And
good
Merry
morning.
Christmas and a Happy New Year to you both.
You too.
Hey, Jim, I don't know what I can say that hadn't been said. I just wish the good Lord bless you with many years of good health and prosperity.
Well, that's very kind of you. I hope so, too.
I agree.
Yes. My question was, a couple of years back, there was a case where a young lady was headed to court to testify against the person that was charged with a crime, and she got killed in an accident. What happened in a case like that where the prime witness who was there to testify, you know, against this person, and they died in an accident? I mean, on the way mm-hmm. to court, I think it was a sexual crime, too. So with her, the only person probably that was, you know, that could positively identify or say this, he committed this crime. What happened in that case, in a case like that? Do you remember that case?
I don't necessarily remember that off the top of my head, frankly, but you know, if we could show that the perpetrator or the defendant or the accused had some role in that, then the judge could allow us to use statements that witness made previously in the trial. But we have to be able to show that link that of responsibility. So if somebody dies during the course of a case pending and it's by natural causes or an accident, there's really nothing that we can do. We can't use that evidence because the person has a right to confront their accuser. So we'd have to be able to show
now,
that
it
link.
It still go on, right? That's correct, right?
If we could show that the accused had some responsibility in that person's death or absence, then yes.
Let's go to Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller, and I really enjoy the show.
Well, thank you. You have a question for Julia?
Well, I have a point that I'm being told that the people today in driver's ed, they learn what your legal rights are when you get stopped by the police and what you're obligated to tell that officer. And I if that's true, why do we not put out like a public address announcement so all people are aware of that situation, so that they do act properly when they are stopped by law enforcement?
I think there's a lot of discussion out about those kinds of issues, and those are the things we talked about earlier about the community needing to be a part of this process, because there's so many different places where you can have that conversation. I particularly talk to young people at schools all the time about their rights and responsibilities. I know a lot of law enforcement agencies do that sort of thing. So I agree with you. There needs to be continued conversation about that.
Yeah, and my second point is this. I was involved with law enforcement, and the body cameras, I think, should be able to work both ways. It always seems like they always want to watch and make sure that the officer is doing exactly what he is supposed to do, but we should maybe turn around and look at how these people act when they are stopped and or arrested, and perhaps we could charge them with misdemeanor obstruction of justice.
Let me tell you.
Fine to $500, and perhaps half of it go to the cost of keeping these cameras, half of it goes to
Okay, hold on, Mark. Let her respond here.
Just tell you that, you know, I think body cameras have been a great benefit to law enforcement and to prosecution, frankly, because people like to see the evidence. They want to see the witnesses, and that body camera evidence is really helpful to us, more so than it is against the police officers, frankly. So I think the U of I is about to get body cameras soon, and my understanding is the U of I police officers want those body cameras. They want them to be able to help them resolve issues on campus. So that's a good thing.
And we go to Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Yes, Jim. I want to compliment you and congratulate you on your career. I think you've done an excellent job
I agree.
With your program, and I wish you and your wife the best in that regard. My question to Julia is reference to fines and restitution. Can you tell me what efforts are made to collect those fines and restitution? It is no good for the judge to assess it if nothing is done about collecting it.
Absolutely, and we have a contract with a collections agency that does those collections for us on a large scale. And they do everything from tax intercepts. So when people get their income tax returns back, we can take what we're owed out of that to, again, standard collections procedures, to wage garnishment and all of that sort of thing. So we've had a great relationship with this collections agency. It's Harris and Harris out of Chicago, and they represent a lot of governments. And so those efforts continue. And that's a way to collect those funds without bringing somebody back to court on a petition to revoke and putting them in jail, so that we don't, you know, have people in jail because of non-payment of fines and fees and restitution. That's been a great program.
And what about a repeat offender that comes back in and owes fines from one or two times ago, and they're appearing before the judge? Is that not somewhat of a contempt situation?
It could be, but again, there's a cost-benefit analysis to, do we want to keep people in custody because they haven't paid? And I think the general consensus is that we try to avoid that, and so we try to use this civil process with our collections agency to get to their assets without incarcerating them. Again, it's a cost benefit. I understand what you're saying, and you know that's a philosophical discussion that we've had. And generally, you know, people don't want us to have people in jail because they don't owe money.
Right. No, I understand that. But the judges don't address that then to the defendant if they're, you know, they're in reform the third time and they still owe, you know, they've not.
Yeah, not generally in Champaign County. We really rely on our collections process for that.
I appreciate the call. Well, let's go to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hey, good morning, guys. Julie, I had a question. It's going back quite a few years. When I was a lot younger, we once had a person come into our house who was completely drunk after like a Super Bowl party or whatnot. And what I remember was we had called the police, and because my dad had like kind of tackled them or whatever. And at the time, I remember the police said that the gentleman was lucky because that situation is a justifiable homicide. And I was always wondered, is that actually true when someone enters your home and
Yeah, I would say that they would have to do something. I mean, and this happens kind of frequently around here, it seems like, especially more on campus, where somebody has too much to drink and they get lost and they end up in a house that they thought they were supposed to be in, but they're not, and they pass out on the couch. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a common thing, actually, around here. For it to be a justifiable use of deadly force, of self-defense, the person would have to do something that would put you in a reasonable belief that you were in danger of imminent death or great bodily harm. So the mere fact of them just being in your house is not enough, but they would have to kind of make some move towards you that would give you some reason to believe you were in danger. But it does happen relatively frequently, and I've always found homeowners are generally pretty understanding of that situation, and I appreciate that. We have had a couple situations where people have appropriately pulled out guns on someone who's been in their house who's coming towards them, and luckily we haven't had any situations where anybody actually got shot or killed. But people who are knowledgeable of the use of firearms and the use of force have handled those situations very appropriately.
So the moral of that story is, if you find a drunk on your couch, don't shoot him.
Just call the police.
Right away.
Unless
he's trying to do something to you.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those situations. Ed Perino once, I remember, had someone in his house that he held at gunpoint. Well done, Ed.
And call the cops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's go to Don. Hi, Don.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I was just wondering, Julie, in lieu of doing the right thing for the community, if there's been any follow-up or if you can give us any update on the illegal alien that got away with murder on 74.
That is a case that we continue to be involved in with the now federal authorities, trying to locate that individual and, if possible, to have him returned to the United States. We believe he's not in the United States anymore. We believe he's back in his country of origin, and we're continuing to work with the federal authorities on getting him back here.
So that's been a recent update?
Well, I mean, I'm telling you now, so I guess so. It's not ever been a situation that was closed. That's been an ongoing process. It's not an easy process to get somebody back. But it's something we consider an open case and will continue to consider an open case, absolutely.
So is that somebody that they have found or they're still looking for?
I think they're still looking for him, and every once in a while, you know, you get some information that they have reason to believe somebody's here or somebody's there. But there's a whole process that you have to go through to get someone extradited back from another country, and it's complicated. It involves the federal authorities, and they're working with us. This was a situation where an individual committed a DUI, and it was a fatal DUI, and ran into a woman who was driving. He was going the wrong way. He was taken to the hospital and not placed into custody by the state police, and then he left the country, or you know, the jurisdiction certainly, and we believe again the country.
Just kind of walked out, I think.
Essentially, and so we're continuing to try to locate him and get him back here. That will be an open case forever and or until we find him and get him back here.
Retta, 356-9397. If you have a question or a comment for Julia Reitz, she'll be here up until 10 o'clock this morning. Then we'll have an open line until 10:30, and then that will be followed by Busey Money Talk. And tomorrow, Julia, we're having a grand old time on this
yes.
show. We've got a bunch of singers and some entertainers and a few interviews and
a celebration.
A celebration, yes,
a
indeed.
A celebration of you, which yeah. is well deserved. And I've done really well so far this hour in maintaining my composure.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something that's going to make us both cry.
Well,
but,
when you started talking, and I was sitting here watching the board, and it's. Yeah, okay, so. Oh, hey, there's another caller.
That's enough of that, right? So
let's take the call.
But tomorrow we're going to have something rather unique. A friend of yours, Elizabeth Hess,
yes.
is going to interview me.
And she has interviewed me, and she will do a fantastic job, so I'm looking forward to that.
Let's go to Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Jim and Julie. How are you guys doing today?
We're great.
What's up, Dave?
Good. Yeah, remember, Jim, about a week or 2 weeks ago, I called in about a individual who was assaulted in his car in front of his family, and the guy just reached in his car and started beating him up, and the guy got arrested for assault, but then the next day went before the judge, and the state's attorney got up and said, case dismissed, no charges. How could something like that happen?
You remember that
case? No, I'm going to have a hard time remembering the specific facts of that, and so I really, I remember we talked about that, I think it was a month or two ago, and I'm struggling.
It might have.
I think, again, we're going to look at the entirety of the situation, and there might be a reason that, you might not agree with, and I wish I had it in front of me so that I could give it to you. But I think we discussed that last time, so.
Well, thank you, Ed. I appreciate the call. Nothing new to report. It's hard to recall things that happened
sometimes
ago. And,
I try.
And what do, I know you do, but it's difficult to
mm-hmm.
do.
Yeah, and sometimes, when it's somebody who's involved in a case, I've always said, call my office to ask for my secretary, Julie. She's always ready and able to take messages, and we try to follow up, and we've done, been able to answer some questions for people who, were directly involved in cases or situations that needed to be addressed. And so, again, this has been a great platform and a great opportunity. I hope that I continue to be a part of this show, but obviously I'm very, very sad that it's not going to be with you, my friend.
Well, Julie is sitting back there now.
She is.
I wonder what she's going to kind of a job she's going to give me now.
She has the radio on. She's listening and. And I have amazing people in the state's attorney's office, and we have amazing people in the criminal justice system. I had mentioned to you before this week earlier, I was at a retirement reception for Jeff Christensen, who's the U of I police chief who's retiring this year. He started his law enforcement career as a student patrol when he was a U of I student and
oh, wow.
went all the way up through the ranks to chief of police at the U of I.
That's been a lot of years, too, hasn't it?
An amazing person who will always say that it has nothing to do with him, that it's always a team effort, and I'm going to miss him greatly as he retires, and you, and so it's an emotional week.
And of course, John Schmidt
yes.
Entered into that as well. I
mm-hmm.
know that you said some nice things about him on the air, and you talked about him off the air as well as somebody that you were really quite fond of.
Yes.
Only about a minute or so left. What is on your what's on your plate now? You have anything that's really number one as far as your office is concerned?
Well, again, moving forward with this Youth Assessment Center move and also continuing to work on how we support those who have mental health issues and substance abuse issues. I think I've got a meeting this afternoon with Rosecrantz and with Alan Jones from the Sheriff's Office, and I think, again, we're continuing always to work on those collaborations and to help people in the community as best we can.
Well, you know how I feel about you, so I'm not going to try to say it again, but thanks for your time, not only today, but all throughout the time I've been on Penny.
I always say, you say, come back again, and I say, anytime you ask me, and so I'm... Anytime you ask me, Jim, and I hope the same goes for you. Anytime I ask you, I hope you're going to be there to help us, help the community. I know you will.
I sure will. And thanks so much again. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Welcome back to Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. This is an open line up until 10:30. Then it'll be time for Busey Money Talk. We're at 356-9397. The Cathell Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. So we can talk about whatever you would like to talk about in the next 20 minutes or so. So if you have something on your mind, just give us a call. Interesting story by Howard Kurtz, who writes for Fox News. And the headline is, Hell Freezes Over. The media start admitting that Trump's first year isn't a flop. And I remember I always tell you where I get these stories. This one is from Fox News. If I turn over to CNN, I probably would not see this kind of story. But I'll tell you some of the things that that he says in there, that there's no denying that he has had some successes that just basically have been ignored by most of the media. Jack is first up here in this open line. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, sir. Congratulations on a great career. I wanted to ask you, what did you do before the radio was invented? That's a joke.
I understand. I understand.
I have a question. Over your illustrious career, I'm sure that you have a funny story or two about maybe Lauren not wearing pants during a show or some crazy thing. I was just wondering if you could share a funny story from your career, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you. Well, speaking of Lauren, I don't know about not wearing any pants. The only time I didn't wear any pants during a broadcast was down at Missouri. Ed Bond will remember this. It was so hot you could not believe it. And so a couple of us just in the booth. We didn't walk out in public with our underwear on, but did indeed take off the pants and ask the couple of guys from the Atlanta Equipment Room if they'd bring up just some shorts that we could wear, which is what we did. Lauren Tate, there's too many stories about Lauren Tate that I do not have enough time to tell. Maybe I should write a book sometime. We could call it, he's got a podcast now called Tate Unedited. I'll write one called Tate Behind the Scenes. Ed Bond could contribute to that. I think he's paying attention to what I have to say, but you never quite know. He's a busy guy. We're at 356-9397, and our text line is 351-5357. Let's go to Jim. Hello, Jim.
Morning, Jim. How are you, sir?
I am good. What's going on with you?
Well, you know, we're still doing Christmas Carolers choir thing. We've got two more performances this season.
Okay.
And I wanted to invite you out this evening, because I think that you might deserve a break on maybe a new career for yourself as a singer.
If I were to sing for you, Jim, that would be the end of your choir.
Oh, I doubt that.
Never to be seen or heard again. No, I appreciate you asking. I don't sing. I said many times that I'm a big fan of show business, but I can't sing, dance, or act.
Have you ever been to the Champaign County Nursing Home?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Not for a real long time. This has been several years. Is that where you're going tonight?
That's where we're at tonight, and we're expecting, I'm pretty sure we're going to have media coverage tonight as well.
Oh, good.
And possibly
good.
Some people from the county board singing with us tonight.
Well, they do a lot of singing, so about various things. But
well, I think it's a chance for them to show some positive a positive light on. And personally, I believe that we're very fortunate to have a facility like that in our county. And I personally believe that when we lose it, if we do, we'll find ourselves in the same position that Vermilion County and others are now. And that didn't work out very well for them. But at any rate, I didn't call to talk about politics. We're going to do some Christmas caroling tonight at the Champaign County.
What time will you?
Welcome to join us.
What time?
We start at 6:30 p.m.
Okay. Well, I hope some people.
Room.
Yeah, I hope some people show up, and I know the folks that are. Living out there, we'll enjoy it. So thank you, Jim. Always nice to talk to you. Let's go to Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I want to talk about Wednesday's show with Jim Dye.
Okay.
I'm in the minor of Jim Dye. I like the articles and the research that he does, but when he starts talking about the nursing home, it's just not today that you need to talk about. The nursing home didn't create itself. It's a creature of the county board. Maybe 7 county boards or 8, I don't know. But whatever's happened at the nursing home actually starts at the county board or stops at the county board. They either do their job or they don't. And in this case, it looks like they haven't done their job for 15 years. So that part of the story needs to be told, too. We need a nursing home. We need to support it, but it's got to have a fair shake, and I don't think it ever had one, and the governing board, as it did exist, was almost a non-entity, and the fact that it was an advisory board only, reporting to the county board, who didn't want to do anything in the first place except give the responsibility or accountability to somebody else. And
oh,
that's probably enough.
Yeah, this deficit and all these vendors and all those things, it's built up over the years. That's for sure. And I don't know. I have not been on the county board. I have not been at their meetings except for a couple over the time I've been here. So I'm not trying to. Put words in their mouth, but it seemed to me that they kind of kicked the can down the road a few times.
Well, I've attended a lot of county board meetings, and there's a lot of well-meaning, sincere people on that board, but to kick the can down the road is putting it mildly. I mean, they tried to kick the can off the edge of the world. The world is flat, isn't it?
Okay, Dave, well, thank you. Appreciate it. Be only a short period of time here. We'll get as many calls as we possibly can. This is Alan. Hello, Alan.
Well, Jim, I think you think maybe we finally got a quarterback.
The kid from Texas?
Yeah.
I don't know. He everything that you read, and I saw some television of him, shots of him throwing the ball. Looks like he can do that. He looks like a good-sized guy. Isn't he about 6'4 or so?
Yeah, 6'4 is what he is, and they say he can run, too. I'm just surprised that a few more schools in Texas didn't go after him like we did.
Yeah, you always wonder about that, although, you know, there's a possibility that we had a connection there through one of the coaches or an alum or somebody.
Well,
that,
I think it was.
Influenced him and said, this is a good place. And you got a chance to come here and you know the situation and you could maybe our starter, you know. Yep. And kids like to hear that they're not going to have to go and redshirt or they're not going to have to play behind two other guys for a real long time and so on.
Yeah, they got a couple others from Texas that look pretty good too. I was a little worried that we might lose them all, but they stayed with us.
Yep.
Well, it's good dealing with you all these years, Jim.
Well, thank you, Ellen. You've been a loyal caller, and I just wish that we had some better things to talk about with regard to athletics. So our football and basketball team, yeah, we want them to, maybe they'll come back pretty soon. I sure hope so. It makes a difference in the all over the all over the county. That's for sure. Or if not, other places as well. Yeah, people have better attitudes about lots of things. If the football team and the basketball team can win some games. Hey, gotta go, man. Appreciate it. Quick break, Mr. Bond. Coming right back. Yeah, we'll try to get our show over by then tomorrow. We know we're going to start at 9 o'clock, and we don't know exactly when it's going to end. We got all kinds of people singing songs and people that have called in and taped some comments. And I don't know. I think it'll be entertaining, hopefully, and have some fun. Go to Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just want to wish you a happy retirement. It's been a pleasure quarreling with you over the years.
Yeah,
from time to time.
We've had a few disagreements, but we've always been, I think, agreeable and not disagreeable a conversation, but just an exchange of information, which is what I like, and I know that that you do too.
Yes, sir. Yep, absolutely. So, I just wanted to put my call in. I hadn't called in a recent week, and I want to make sure I want to get online and let you know how I feel about that. So,
that's very nice of you, Thomas. I've enjoyed talking to you, and keep up the good work. You're an advocate for a lot of very important things, and I hope you'll keep at it.
I will do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, Howard Kurtz says, in the wake of yesterday's final passage of massive tax cuts, that moment has arrived. The dominant media narrative, of course, is that Trump hasn't gotten much done, that he's in over his head, that he doesn't understand government, that he keeps picking petty fights rather than winning big battles. But the thing about the pundits is that they get tired of pushing the same line week after week, month after month. Some inevitably want to seize credit for a new insight for getting ahead of the pack with a burst of contrarian wisdom. And that hot take is, hey, maybe Trump has gotten some important things done after all. It's true that the president has not gotten much from the Republican Congress this year, but a new law that cuts taxes for businesses and individuals, even though the measure polls poorly, is not mainly aimed at the middle class. That puts an end to the verdict that Trump doesn't know how to work the Hill. Like it or not, this is a sprawling piece of legislation that was quickly pushed through the House and the Senate in a show of party line muscle. And Trump hasn't gotten much credit for the record-breaking stock market, but there is now some recognition that the Dow, almost 25,000, can't be completely divorced from his policies. And there's starting to be a greater appreciation for the president's progress on slashing regulations and appointing judges, even though three nominees recently had to withdraw, one because he couldn't answer his Senate panel's questions about basic court procedures. And on Axios, Jim Handel and Mike Allen said, the media often appraises presidencies and politics through liberal tinted glasses, but the vast majority of the Republican Party like, even love, these policies. We've been saying all year, watch what he does, not what he says. Until recently, he hasn't done much, but these wins are substantial with consequences for millions of people for many years to come. They note that Trump has won approval not just for Neil Gorsuch, but for a dozen circuit court judges. Let's go to John Rector. Hello, John.
Good morning,
John.
Sir. How are you?
I'm good.
What's
going on?
I just, I got to participate in the Jim Turpin Love Fest today.
Well,
you're just an amazing guy. This community is going to take a loss when you're not on the air. My favorite quick Jim Turpin story is I had the pleasure of going to First Presbyterian Church with you and Louise and your family, and my youngest son Brian was a huge Illinois fan. And I remember one day when Brian was 7 or 8, I said, "Brian, that's Mr. Turpin. He's the one who did that call in the game that Illinois wins, Final Four. And you were just kind and gracious to repeat that for my young Illini fan. And again, just want to wish you the best. You and your family are amazing people, and very blessed to have known you, and thanks for your service to Champaign-Urbana.
Very kind of you to call, John. Appreciate it very much. Thank you so much. John Richter's a very busy guy himself. Well, in the other news, quickly, SUV plows into pedestrians in Australia in a deliberate act. Two people in custody there. No charges for Venus Williams in the fatal Florida auto accident. That happened some time ago. She was charged in connection with a June traffic accident in Florida that killed one man. And the driver of the car that struck the tennis star's SUV also was not charged. Palm Beach Gardens police determined that neither party violated the right-of-way, according to Reuters. And police initially found Williams at fault after surveillance video footage was shown that she entered the intersection lawfully, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, she was found, I shouldn't say not guilty, no charges against Venus Williams. We'll take our final break here and make way for the folks from Busey Money Talk coming up. And then we'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock with a very special show.